This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Looking to start a side hustle or become your own boss? Do it with Shopify. Whether you're selling succulents or stilettos, Shopify has the industry-leading tools to help you create, control, and grow your own business. So get serious about selling and get Shopify today. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.co.uk/special offer.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Wednesday, February 14th. I'm Alex Osola for The Wall Street Journal. Coming up on today's show, forget passwords and badges at work. Your face or your fingerprint could be your next security key. WSJ reporter Danny Lewis tells us about biometrics, the advantages, and some of the risks, too. And then, electric vehicle sales growth has slowed in recent months. That's pushed automakers who have invested billions of dollars in EVs to quickly change gears. We'll hear about how it's affecting the auto industry from WSJ reporter Mike Colias. But first, iris scans, facial recognition, biometric passkeys may sound like something out of science fiction, but they're already more common than you might think. Security experts say they're more secure than passwords. But for employees who use biometric technology in workplace systems, there are some risks. WSJ reporter Danny Lewis is here to tell us more. Danny, how are these types of data actually being used today?
Yeah, it's very Minority Report, if you remember that movie. But the way this is often used today is really for identification and security. It could be every time you unlock your smartphone with your face. That's using biometrics to protect your device and your personal information. Biometrics can also be used in some more public places, like airport security, concert venues, stadiums, even some conferences. Usually, they're more often used to grant access or keep people out of places that need a lot more security. But we're likely to start seeing more of it in public life in the years to come.
How about in the workplace in particular?
So I spoke with Mohamed Lazouni. He's the chief technical officer at Aware, which develops security systems to authenticate people's identities. And he says biometrics could be used to make everything secure for employers and easy for employees. So one scenario he laid out for me was, you know, imagine you park your car outside your office building and then you can walk straight in. You don't have to swipe a security badge to get inside. You can walk over to the elevator. It's already waiting to bring you to your floor. And by the time you sit down at your desk, your computer is already logged into all of your systems and programs. Lazouni says that in the future, this can all be made possible thanks to a network of cameras and sensors and artificial intelligence that can pick up all sorts of biometric data on you as soon as you enter the building.
Who is in favor of using biometrics for access to our various electronic systems?
Security experts and employers, I would say. Their argument is not only does it make it convenient for the employees and the employers, but it makes everything a lot more secure and a lot harder to fake. It can be really easy to scam someone out of their password. Just think of all the phishing emails most people get, like every day, someone pretending to be their boss or a coworker and trying to get them to hand over personal information. You can't really do that with a fingerprint or a face scan.
Okay, so the upsides are pretty clear. How about the risks?
Privacy. So I spoke with Haley Sukuyama, who's the Associate Director of Legal Activism at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. They're a nonprofit that advocates for civil liberties in the digital world. And she said that using biometrics to access things like your work emails can be really problematic because you're having to hand over very personal and very permanent data. So that could mean that your face scans might be floating around out there. In theory, someone might be able to make an AI replica of you, using your face. She said when we were talking, you can always get issued a new ID badge. You can't really get issued new fingerprints.
So what does that mean for workers in the longer term?
Not everyone may be comfortable with having to hand over that data. Some of the security experts I spoke with who are working on biometric systems say that this data is anonymized and is very, very hard to hack. But at the same time, Sukuyama argues that there also need to be alternatives that are made available, and employers need to be really careful about getting consent from employees and informing them about how their data will be used.
That was WSJ reporter Danny Lewis. You can hear more about the future of biometrics at work in the latest episode of our sister podcast, The Future of Everything. We'll link it in our show notes. Coming up, automakers have invested billions of dollars in EVs. Is it paying off? That's after the break.
What is dedication?
People ask, how your children learn how to ride a bike and you didn't. I just created an environment where they taught themselves and all I had to do was be there.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
As recently as a year ago, automakers were struggling to meet demand for electric vehicles. And then, over the course of 6 months, the dynamic flipped, and potential EV buyers have proven to be more hesitant, even as automakers went all in on battery power. WSJ reporter Mike Colias tells us how automakers are pivoting and what that means for the future of EVs. Mike, the rate at which consumers are buying electric vehicles is slowing down. What's behind that?
There's two big factors that most dealers, auto executives would point to, and surveys, importantly. One is price. Generally, you're going to be paying, call it 10 to 15% more for an apples-to-apples comparison gas-powered car. And, you know, that was fine 18 months ago before interest rates went way up, but that's made it a lot tougher for people to figure out the monthly payment on that. And then the second thing is just, I would put in the general bucket of charging anxiety around, will I be able to find enough chargers on a road trip? How long is it going to take to charge when I'm out and about?
How is this slowdown affecting car makers?
There was a lot of big factors that were pushing the companies in this direction. Regulations in the US, China, Europe, you've got to meet these targets. You've got even like cities and individual countries that are saying, well, you can't sell gas-powered cars here after 2030 or 2035. And so that combined with the fact that Wall Street was sort of whispering in their ear for years saying, look at the value of Tesla, you've got to move in this direction. Now that they've seen this flattening growth curve, they've got to recalibrate what they had planned. And so in the last few years, you had big plans being made around battery factories and electric vehicle plants that they were converting, even raw materials going to mining companies and striking lithium deals and all the raw material stuff you need for batteries. None of that stuff has stopped. They're still going to have to do that to make this transition, but it's certainly slowed. And you're seeing Ford, for example, they said, well, we're going to build this battery plant in Michigan, but we're going to make it smaller. And we're going to press pause on this other plant we were doing in Kentucky. And so billions of dollars that they had planned to spend is being put on pause.
Yeah. Was this slowdown gradual or did it happen all at once?
It was pretty sudden relative to how these things normally work. From, let's say, 2019 through the beginning of last year, there was just like this real enthusiasm around EVs. There were a bunch of new models coming out. There were huge wait lists for those. People were willing to pay above sticker price. And then we got into the spring and into the summer, and you started hearing dealers say, well, I used to not be able to get any of these, and now I've got three or four or five of them sitting there, and nobody's coming to kick the tires kind of thing. And then we finally started hearing from the auto executives saying, yeah, well, it's not materializing quite like we thought, and we're going to maybe rethink the cadence of some of these investments.
Where does the industry stand when it comes to EVs right now?
What the companies are trying to do is, okay, how can we make this adjustment with conserving as much cash as we can, because there's a lot of uncertainty in the market right now. They want to be careful with their capital. And so they're trying to figure out, okay, we can't just stop because China is a third EV new car sales now. We don't want to fall further behind them. We don't want to fall further behind Tesla. We need them for Europe. If this is the future, we have to be there. So we have to like thread that needle of scale these things up, which are hugely expensive, but still meet where the consumer's at. And that's proving to be a really tricky thing. One of the things we are seeing is sales of hybrid cars, combination gas electric cars, have really taken off in the last year. They actually grew a little faster than EVs. They're not quite as expensive. There's a little premium, but not as much as a full EV. A lot of people see it as a nice interim step. For some automakers, that's a good thing. Like Toyota is really strong in hybrids, and they've been cautionary on EVs all along. Whereas a company like GM dismissed hybrids and tried to go straight to the EVs, and they may have some more scrambling to do.
So what are automakers anticipating for the year ahead?
Most of the forecasts are for EV sales to grow again in the US. So, you know, it was roughly 7.5-8% of new car sales were EVs last year. A lot of people have that going above 10%, but we'll see. Tesla said they expect much slower growth this year, not a decline, but they just said considerably slower growth. So they're still 60% of the market, but we're going to have a lot of new models coming out. Like Kia just put out this EV9. It's a larger 3-row SUV. And there's been a ton of demand for that early on. So it could just be people have been waiting for what they want. And so it's going to be an interesting year to see if there's momentum in the EV market or if it continues to slow further.
What can we expect to see in the next couple of years?
Well, a lot of the forecasts I'm seeing now expect a slowdown this year, maybe into next year. But then as you get more into the second part of the decade, they expect things to accelerate again. And there's a lot of uncertainty around those predictions. But the rationale is, okay, battery prices are going to continue to come down. We're going to have more charging. There's a lot of federal money going into this for charging infrastructure. There's a lot of federal money for battery production. The more people see, oh, my neighbor has an EV, let me check it out. It's just going to be more out there in the ether. And so there is that expectation, but there's things that could go wrong too. A change in administration, if some of the federal funding gets pulled, that won't help. There's a lot of negativity around EVs. It's gotten a little political. So there's a bunch of factors swirling, and we'll just have to see how things shake out in the next few years.
That was our reporter, Mike Colias. And that's it for Tech News Briefing. Today's show was produced by Julie Chang, with supervising producer Catherine Millsop. I'm Alex Osola for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back this afternoon with TNB Tech Minute. Thanks for listening.